And I'm joined by Rick Burstell from the Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties to talk about ticks. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm pretty nice. It's a beautiful day.
It is. So the ticks are up and...
the ticks are back.
Up and ready to go this morning.
And a lot of people are bringing them into the office looking for ID and for some good information about what do we do about this dilemma.
Have they gotten worse in recent years, or is it they're just spreading from Connecticut?
They kind of go up and down. I mean, really, if you look at the evolution of this, if you go back to the early 90s, we didn't have any here. So they've basically, you could see them migrating up the valley over the last, say, 15, 20 years. So, you know, if you went back 25 years ago, you couldn't find a deer tick anywhere around here. But now they're everywhere, and there's billions of them, it would seem. So our native tick, the one we were most familiar with, which is the dog tick, you know, you see them once in a while, but it's nothing like the deer tick.
The dog ticks are the bigger ticks?
They're a little bigger. The interesting thing about the dog tick is the nymphal tick doesn't feed on humans. So it's just the big guy, and you often find those guys before they become a real problem. So with the deer tick, it's the summer nymph that's most responsible for human disease. And they're so small, people miss them all the time. They don't even know they were bit. And the next thing you know, they're sick. And if they don't have significant symptoms, they'll just overlook it. You get a mild fever and some flu-like symptoms in the summertime, I would think tick, you know, because there's not too many flus moving around here in the summertime. So whenever you feel feverish in the summer, you should always think
your
tick.
Your joints? Is that
joints are affected. You could get a rash, but, you know, that's about 60%. 60 to 70% of the people will get a sort of an expanding rash or a bullseye rash. It doesn't have to look like a bullseye. It just has to be an expanding rash. And if it happens from someplace where there was a tick bite, and it, you know, there's normally a little red area around the bite, which is normal, maybe the size of a nickel. If it starts to expand and it reaches 2 inches in diameter, then we know it's actually the bacteria moving out into your body. And they don't really move through your blood system exclusively. They move through everything, through all the tissues, into all your organs, and it gets quite complicated for some people. A lot of people get over it. A lot of people get treatment early and never have a problem again. I've had Lyme probably 3 or 4 times from different bites. And I've been treated, and I usually feel pretty good. Once in a while, I start thinking, gee, I don't know, is my knee hurting because of Lyme, or is it just because I'm 65 years old? You know, so it's hard to tell sometimes, especially as you start to get older.
And how did this start? Were there always deer ticks, or did they caught of some disease, or the deer ticks are new, or how did this start?
Well, ticks have been around, you know, since before humans, so they've been around for a long time, and I'm sure a lot of these pathogens have been around as well. As far as in this part of the world, the deer tick isn't native here, so, you know, it's really native to places like Kentucky and Tennessee, and down there it's a little different. The nymphal summer ticks don't come up out of the leaves and feed on people very rarely. Up here, that's basically the big problem we have, is the summertime nymphal ticks come up and feed on us, and they usually live in the leaf litter, basically the leaves that are in the woods. They don't like open fields or lawns. They can't survive. They dry out very easily. They need to have humidity near 90 or above percent for a lot of parts of their life, especially when they're trying to lay eggs. So that's why they're under the leaf litter, which makes it difficult to do anything about them. You know, if you're spraying a pesticide and they're under 5 layers of leaves, it's not really going to get to them. So it makes it a little more difficult. When you're walking through leaf litter, that's often in the summertime how you pick them up. So what we tell people is don't walk in leaves, you know, because that's where ticks live. If you are going to walk in the leaves, we suggest you spray your shoes and your socks with permethrin, which is a pesticide, which people are very concerned about, wearing pesticides on their body. But truthfully, the amount of caution that you have to use with this particular product, once it dries on your clothing, it would be extremely unlikely that you would ever have a problem with that. But if you get these tick-borne diseases, you could have a serious problem and you know, potentially a fatal problem if you're not treated properly. It's not just Lyme disease. Lyme disease is the one we all hear about a lot. Really destroys the quality of your life, but there's quite a few other co-infections that you can get at the same time. Babesiosis, anaplasmosis, Bartonella bacteria, all these other types of diseases that you may get from one bite. So you could get 2 or 3 different things from that one bite, and people often end up in the hospital from that. And there's a lot of people, if you go downstate, New Jersey, Connecticut, Long Island. There's a lot of people down there that have really been dealing with major, major problems for the last 15 or 20 years or even longer, and have had a difficult time getting good treatment because treatment is a little nebulous for some. For some, you know, you take 21 or 28 days of an antibiotic and you're done with it. For others, they just seem to have ongoing problems. That's why we're doing this program this Friday evening.
Yeah, we haven't mentioned that yet.
That's true.
That Dr. Brian Fallon's going to be at the Columbia Green Community College on Friday.
Correct, at 7 p.m. at the college. He's the lead. He's the director of the Tick-Borne Disease Research Center at Columbia University. He's one of the leading research guys in the world. This guy really knows his stuff. He's also a psychiatrist, and I think what people need to understand is Lyme disease is very complicated, and it actually has a lot of effects on the brain, and he's going to talk a lot about that as well. And things like depression and lots of different things are actually related to Lyme, and he's been able to see why. He can see blood flow changes in the brain, all in response to Lyme. And there's also a lot of other diseases that are quite similar that are often linked with Lyme, like chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, multiple sclerosis. All these other diseases seem to have some connections with Lyme as well. Some people think maybe they trigger, that Lyme triggers these other diseases. It's hard to say at this point, but I think Dr. Fallon will clear a lot of that up so people really understand that it really does get into the brain and it causes a lot of issues. It also gets into the heart and all the other tissues we have. So it can be a really serious problem if you're not treated. Basically, that's what you really need to do is pay attention for symptoms. If you have symptoms and it's between May and October, always think tick first, and then, you know, mention that to your doctor. I think everybody needs to be responsible for their own health. You can't leave that in the hands of your doctor. Everybody needs to learn as much as they can about what's going on in their community. And this is a big problem in the entire Hudson Valley. People really need to understand what the symptoms are, what to look for, and what are the best ways to not get these diseases. I brought some great stuff for the radio people to look at today, which is
so what can we show everybody?
Okay, I have this right here. These are treated socks, permethrin treated socks that you can buy in the store. There's about 8 or 10 different companies that make permethrin treated clothing. If you wear treated socks and treated shoes, your chances of getting bit in the summer go down incredibly.
Because mostly they come in from the bottom almost all the time?
That's correct. The summer ticks are very, very small. They're usually right at the ground level. They're not climbing tall up onto the vegetation 3 feet like the adult tick does. The summer guys are much closer to the ground.
So the adult tick, because I've read something about ticks and they feel for air pressure or something, like breath, so, and they fall on breath?
They usually what they do is they sit on a plant somewhere and they wait. And then when they hear something, whether it's a breeze from an animal walking by, whether it's a shadow, I'm sure there's also some CO2 awareness that they have as well. They start moving their front legs so they can grab onto a deer or another animal. And that's kind of what the adults do. The little guys are more likely to get on your shoes and socks first. So if your shoes and socks are treated, your chances of them getting up your body are very low. Research is very promising. It's actually better than spraying your yard with pesticides and doing daily tick checks. Daily tick checks always sound like a really good idea, but the problem is not everybody does it. And even me, I know I've had Lyme many times. There are days when I just don't feel like it because I'm tired. And those are usually the days that the next day you find a tick on you. So I often think the tick is somehow messing with my mind and making me not look.
Yeah, I always ask, is there a word for when earlier in the day you pull a tick off of yourself, the rest of the day you feel phantom ticks all over your body? Is there a word for that?
Paranoid? I know, that's what I am. But I also brought a pair of pants as well. And I'll be wearing these on Friday evening at the college. And these are also permethrin-treated pants.
And they match the socks.
Yeah, they're kind of nice. I mean, they're actually very similar to the pants I ordinarily wear, except a little pricier, I think. But not that bad. I think these were $74 at L.L. Bean.
Well, if they save you a doctor's visit, then.
Yeah, if they save your life or save a doctor's visit, you're way ahead by doing that. And I've been trying to promote that idea of permethrin on the body, at least on the clothing, because that's the best answer we have right now.
Is there a permethrin spray that you can get at CVS?
Yes, I also brought a can of the spray, and there's quite a few places. This one comes from the River Basin, which is down in Catskill on West Bridge Street. They've been selling it there for quite a few years. Most of the sporting goods places will carry this, and it's a tick repellent. This one's called Durinon. There's another one called Permanone. And you basically, you know, the instructions are right on the can. It's very simple. You take your laces out of your shoes, take them outdoors, spray your shoes. It doesn't have to be really heavy, just a light spray. Let them dry. Put the laces back in. They're ready to go. I would do that probably every 3 or 4 weeks, but I would certainly follow the label instructions.
And you want to make sure it has what ingredient?
It's permethrin. It's 0.5% permethrin, P-E-R-M-E-T-H-R-I-N. And, you know, DEET also has some effect, but I don't find it as effective. I've used it myself for years, and if I put DEET on my arm and I put a tick on my hand, the tick will walk up over the DEET to get to a place where it can feed. And you know how ticks are. They like to get under your clothing, and you're not supposed to use products like DEET under your clothing anyway. So I don't find DEET as effective. For people that are very sensitive to the idea of using permethrin, perhaps spraying DEET on the clothes isn't a bad idea, but it's certainly not as effective as the permethrin is. So those, you know, the permethrin idea right now is the best answer we have. And the other answer is to try to eliminate tick habitat on your home property. So, and what you do to do that is eliminate shady, leafy areas. That's where they live. That's where the tick habitat is. So if you have a lot of leaves around your house, you could
cut down all the trees.
Well, I wouldn't cut down all the trees, but I would definitely make areas where you know, your children, your family, or your pets go out in the sunny areas more likely. Because on an open, sunny lawn or in a field, you're very unlikely to come into contact with a tick, because within a few hours, it will die. I mean, if you lower the humidity, if the humidity gets down to 60%, most of those guys are going under the leaves just to stay basically hydrated, because they dry out very easily. And that's why, you know, even though we had this brutal winter this year and a brutal winter last year, they survive winter very well as long as there's snow on the ground. They're like a blanket of snow over the top of them, keeps them very well protected. But hot, dry weather, that's very threatening for them. So we had that summer of 2013 where it was brutally hot in this area, and we lost a lot of ticks. The following year, I saw a lot less ticks because I go around and look for ticks. I drag for ticks in different places, and the following year, there were much less. I don't generally see that after a winter, unless maybe it was 20, 25 below with no snow. That could have a good effect on the tick population.
I think I read the hurricane a couple years ago wiped out the mouse population with which lowered the tick population because they didn't have as much blood to feed on?
Well, you know, I didn't read that story. I'm not really sure about that one. Did that come from the Carey Institute or something?
I don't remember where I read that.
But I do remember reading that they said the mouse population being reduced. You know, I read different stories about it. For some, I read that because there weren't mice for them to feed on, they would be feeding on other things like us. That was the one story I read. But, you know, mice aren't the only reservoir hosts for these diseases. There's quite a few other, you know, birds and different small mammals that play a role in this, that actually, even the robin, you know, the lovely robin that flies into your yard and is pulling worms out, they'll actually maintain an infection for 2 or 3 weeks at a high enough level to infect any tick that feeds on them. So in other words, once they get fed on by an infected tick, they maintain that infection and infect any tick that feeds on them after that. And there's quite a few other reservoir hosts that, you know, the chipmunks, the squirrels, quite a few other animals that are playing a role in this.
Rabbits.
Rabbits, yeah. I haven't really heard much about rabbits. I haven't really heard much about rabbits. I don't see rabbits on that list, you know what I mean, which is an interesting thing. I don't know if anybody's actually looked at rabbits.
And guinea hens like to eat them? Is that?
Guinea hens like to eat ticks. Of course, I don't know if you've heard the recent story. So do opossums. Probably even.
Oh, right. Yes. Yes, I did see that.
Even a little better than I think guinea hens.
But it's hard to get a posse of opossums.
It is, and neither one of them are very good on the highway. I don't know if you noticed that, but the guinea hens and the opossums, they're not real good. I always try to tell people, please be careful of our opossums. They're really valuable. Yeah, it may seem like they're not too wise around cars, but, you know, that's, I mean, come on. You know, cars weren't around very long. You know, this is a new thing they haven't really gotten used to yet. They are the only marsupial we have here, so they're quite fascinating. And they do very good tick eating things.
So welcome the opossums and the guinea hens to your property.
Exactly.
With the ticks.
Exactly.
And get rid of the leafy, clean out your leafy underbrush.
Right. And try to let light in, if you can, to the areas where people are going to congregate.
Because the heat and the light will...
The light and the heat will dry things out, and it will make it unfriendly to ticks. So that's really what people need to do on the home grounds. You know, if you want to go a little further than that, some people like to do a perimeter spray And I've looked at research saying, well, you know, it has some effect on ticks. It maybe gets rid of, best case scenario, maybe 62% of the ticks. But they never really see a great drop in human infection rates in that situation. And I can't see 300 million people going out and spraying their yards with permethrin. It just seems irresponsible to me. So my answer would be
instead. Is it okay for the environment?
Well, it's, you know, it's not specific to ticks. So when you're, and remember, the ticks are often under the leaf litter. So anything else that comes into contact, you know, if there's pollinators or any other
probably
insects.
Probably bad for other insects.
Yeah, certainly. Cats will go into seizures and things like that when you spray permethrin. What I say is instead, put a 3-foot border at the edge of where your lawn reaches the woody area, a 3-foot wide border of either gravel or wood chips. And what it does, it actually creates a border so everybody knows if you step on the other side of that, that's where it's more dangerous. Because even if you do this spraying, within a week or two, it's gone away. So it's not really going to maintain that condition for very long. Maybe there's an appropriate time to use it if you were having a family gathering or a wedding or something and you knew you had an infested area, maybe then it would be appropriate to do it. But it's a short-term answer. And I don't think it's a good strategy to use to try to basically keep the tick population in line.
And if you just tuned in, we're speaking with Rick Burstell from the Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia Green Community Counties, and he's previewing a May 1st event with Dr. Brian Fallon at the Columbia Green Community College, and Dr. Fallon is the Director of Tick-Borne Disease Research at Columbia University, and there are a few tickets left for that?
Yeah, I think last night when I left, I think there was about 40 or 50 more seats available, and today's the last day for registration, so if anybody does want to go, they would have to call us today at 622-9820.
622-9820 is the number to call if you want to get a reservation for the May 1st event at Columbia Green Community College.
And just to mention one more thing, this isn't a funded effort that we're doing here. This is stuff that's outside of our budget money. We don't really have anything in our work plan to cover this idea. The college has been gracious enough to offer their fine arts theater for free for us to use for this program. The doctor is also coming up to do a free program for the citizens in the Hudson Valley. And Cooperative Extension, all the people that work there are very enthused to get this information out. Even though we don't really get any money to do it, it's kind of a volunteer effort that we're doing because we think it's really important.
So you guys don't get funded. This is not something that they want to help fund to get this news out. So maybe
if it was bed bugs, we could probably tap into some money. But for some reason, bed bugs, you know, get a lot of interest, and for some reason, deer ticks get very little, which is a little upsetting. We're trying to change that idea. We're trying to get the deer tick also included in the invasive species list because they're non-native and they do harm to human health. And that, by definition, means they are an invasive species, although we haven't been able to get that idea to go with the invasive species people yet for whatever reason. I'm not really sure.
So do we need to talk Albany into funding you better with for tick information or Washington?
Well, you know, Albany, at one point in time, they used to give some monies to the worst counties in the Hudson Valley that had the highest infection rates, they gave some money to. Once the deer tick spread out throughout the state, they stopped doing that. So the health departments were cut back. And, you know, they have a lot of other responsibilities, the local health departments. So we used to get some funding from them back about 5 years ago and you know,
before now that the problem's gotten worse, you get less funding.
We get much less funding. We get no funding now. And unfortunately, the problem has gotten worse. And not only that, it's spread across the whole state. I'm being contacted from people that work for Extension in western New York and way up north in New York. And the ticks are everywhere now. So it's remarkable how quickly they spread. But, of course, they spread on birds and deer and other animals. But birds are definitely key to how quickly they can move.
Do the feds need to do something? Chris Gibson's talked a lot about running on this Lyme disease bill, and is that something we need?
Chris has been very helpful, and Kirsten Gillibrand has also been very helpful to try to pass bills, and I know I've talked to Chris quite a bit about this, and he says that the level of interest in Congress is very low for whatever reason. He doesn't really understand it because he knows how serious the problem is, but he's been working diligently to try to get some you know, new laws passed. I mean, a lot of people just fall out of the radar here, and, you know, insurance companies won't pick up the bill, and a lot of people have to use their own savings to try to get answers to their problems because not everybody gets better just from one or two stints of antibiotics. Sometimes people just have these ongoing problems go on for years. And a lot of it is children. You know, if you look at the list of who gets bitten by ticks the most, it's the 5 to 9 year olds. And that's part
They're the ones playing in the leaves.
That's exactly right. And they're also in shorts and all summer long. And we don't need that to happen. And I know quite a few kids personally that have been really, you know, out of school, all kinds of different disabilities related to these diseases. You know, it's really, and I don't want to see that happen anymore. We need to get this idea out there. People need to understand how important that is. And I know it sounds terrible to put permethrin on children. But if you think about it, if a child gets scabies, they use permethrin for that, which is like 400 times stronger than the permethrin we're talking about on the clothing here. So, and you know, and nobody thinks much about that to get rid of scabies. So, you know, the same idea, permethrin clothing for children is really effective. The research says, you know, sneakers and socks in the summer have a remarkable effect. So, you know, people need to get with the program, really, if they want to stay healthy and safe.
And otherwise, tucking in your socks, is that, that?
Tucking your pants into your socks so at least they can't get inside, you know, because they will go up the inside of your pant leg and feed wherever they can. They're very sneaky. They don't want to be caught. When they bite you, it's not really a bite, but when they poke into you, the first thing they put into your body is a painkiller so you don't feel it. So, and then they once they get themselves in place, actually what they do, their mouth part just kind of excavates a hole because they like to feed in like a well for their blood. So they excavate a hole and then they cement themselves in place. That's why when you try to remove a tick.
Yeah, I was going to ask next.
Yeah, you have to do it very, very slowly because the tick has to release that epoxy type material that's holding it into your body before you can get the mouth part out. So you have to do it very, very slowly. And it's difficult for people because they want it off. So they have a tweezer in their hand, and it's yank, and they yank it out, and often the mouth part breaks off. I've never seen, and I've talked to over 1,000 people that have been bitten by ticks in the last few years here, in the last 10 years, and I've never seen anybody that had more than just a mild infection from the mouth part. So it's not you're not going to catch a disease because the mouth part broke. But, you know, it is nice to get the mouth part out if you can. So you want to do it very, very slowly, very carefully.
Do you put rubbing alcohol or
never
or
put anything on a like tick that, no. You know, and even some of the medical facilities were doing that. You can still find that online, people saying cotton balls with alcohol on the tick. What that does, it causes the tick to regurgitate, first to suffocate because they breathe through their body as well, and so if you cover them with anything, they're going to regurgitate. These pathogens are usually in the gut of the tick, so by making it regurgitate, you're speeding up the time frame for these things to get into your body, so you don't want to do that. You want to be.
What about after? If you pull it off and the head's stuck in, do you want
to? If you pull it off and the head is stuck in, you can, if you like, you can go to your doctor and have him poke around in there, which I've done repeatedly, and it's very painful, and I didn't find it worked. The last few times it happened, I just kept some antiseptic on it, and my body took care of it. It either spit it out or it chewed it up, whatever it was. But
and what about the spiral that people tell you to take them out on a...
The spiral tool, you know, because I used to be funded by the state of New York, I used to say only a pointed tweezer. But now that I'm not funded by anybody, I can really say whatever I want. And I've seen the spiral tool used by several people. And it seems to me that the tick comes out with its mouth part intact. So it sounds to me like it's a good device. The State Health Department never thought it was. So I don't know what that's about. So actually, I do use a tweezer because I've done it so many times, I'm kind of accustomed to it. So I take my time. I do it very carefully. And I you know, it's very rare now for me to break off a mouth part.
And what about pets? Do they make things worse?
Yeah, thanks for, you know, bringing up all these things because I would forget these these things. Yeah, pets are really important. I mean, cats don't seem to have problems with these diseases, but cats do. If your cat goes in and out, that cat's going to bring the ticks into your house. And I know myself, I've found dead ticks in all my chairs for where my cats sit. You know, I look under the cushions and there's a tick because the cat comes in. I used to use those old cheap collars around their neck, and if the tick got near the collar, because that's usually where the tick wants to go, is to the head so the cat can't get to it, and when it gets near the collar, it would crawl off into the chair, and then I would sit down, you know, and those other, you know, I looked through all the cushions and I could see a lot of them I didn't sit down, and the ticks just died in the chair. So you have to be careful with cats as far as bringing them in. What I found was very successful for me is something called the Seresto collar. It's a new product, probably 4 or 5 years old. It's a collar you buy. It's actually cheaper than Frontline or Advantix. It's I think I paid online $44.99. It lasts for 8 months, and it's a collar they wear around their neck. My cats would come in with 10 or 15 ticks on their eyelids, the summer ticks. It was a nightmare trying to get those ticks off their eyelids. Now I never see a tick on them. You know, so that collar has been working very well.
And the price of the Frontline is large, yeah. So that if it's cheaper, then it's much better.
Exactly. The Frontline is at least $10 a month, if not more. So 8 months would be $80, and this is $44.99. And this collar works very well. It actually kills ticks, so it does work very well. Now, with dogs, dogs can actually get sick and die. They have kidney problems and everything associated with these diseases, not just Lyme, but also anaplasmosis, that are affecting Greene County dogs nowadays. So basically, you take your dog into the vet. If it has symptoms, they will treat. If it tests positive and it doesn't have symptoms, usually they won't treat. So, you know, often what happens is once it's had it, it will always test positive. So that's a problem. So they basically wait until they see symptoms. But dog, you know, you really have to be careful with dogs. I find the collar for the dog also works really well because I did not like the Frontline anymore. My dog was very sensitive to it. And it seemed, you know, the area where I would put it on the neck, eventually all the hair fell out. So it made me a little nervous. So the collar works much better, except you have to be careful if you have more than one dog and the dogs play a lot. The collar can be a casualty of, you know, dogs biting each other's necks and things like that. So often if my son brings my dog's brother over, I usually take the collar off while they're playing and then put it back on after they're done. But I find the collar works very well. But you definitely need to get your dogs treated. But once again, dogs and cats bring things into the house too. So you're at risk. And even if you're wearing permethrin shoes and socks and even pants.
Do they sell those for dogs?
What?
The socks?
They don't. They don't. They probably should. You know, that's a thought. Maybe we should market that idea, you know?
Did you say that? And is there a problem with cats on the permethrin?
Permethrin, yeah. Permethrin? If you're spraying your shoes, your socks, your pants, you want to make sure your cat's nowhere nearby because permethrin is – cats are very sensitive to lots of different chemicals, and especially to permethrin. They'll go into seizures. And people who have yard sprays, and that happens. You know, the cat goes into a fresh area and they go into seizures. Probably no permanent – you know, they're not dying or anything, but – I'm sure going into seizure is not a good thing, you know, so you definitely have to be sensitive with these products. And, you know, you always want to do them outside. You always want to do it with adequate ventilation. You don't want to breathe this stuff. You don't ever want to spray it on your clothing when you're in it because your skin will absorb it right into your body, so you don't want to do that. You want to take your pants outside, hang them on the line, spray them, and your socks, let them dry, and they're good to go.
And if you do get a bite, then if you get a tick bite, do you need to go to the doctor right away or?
Well, you know, that's I think if you've never had a tick bite before, I think you should, because I think you need to get your awareness up about it. And I think you need to get your doctor's awareness up about it. One other thing I would like to mention is everybody that's listening to this is no doubt in the Hudson Valley or maybe not. Maybe they're even
there could be in China.
OK, OK. Well, you know, and they do have, you know, Lyme disease does actually go around the world to some degree across Europe and into Asia. So they have that problem over there as well. And where was I going?
The Asian beetles we've traded. Our Lyme ticks.
So, yeah, you know, all of this stuff is actually vitally important to the community, and everybody needs to learn about it so you're safe. And one of the best places you could learn is the Tick-Borne Disease Research Center at Columbia University. All you have to do is Google Tick-Borne Disease Research Center at Columbia, and you'll be brought into that site. There's an enormous amount of things available on that site. Fact sheets about every one of the pathogens that we're talking about here, all kinds of different research, some of the new tests that they're working on today, because, you know, up till today, we still don't have a test that will say if you actually have an active infection, which is a problem, because these people that have these chronic problems, basically they've been told for years that the bacteria are gone, you were treated, and yet they still seem to have the same kind of symptoms associated with that.
There's some mysteries around the whole thing.
Well, there is, but, you know, research has been revealing that actually these things do persist after, you know, first they found that in animal models, and they worked their way up from mice to monkeys, and they've even found that with humans, that sometimes, and maybe it doesn't even have to be actually living bacteria. It could just be pieces that your body would respond to, that you would have an autoimmune response. So it's very complicated, and I think the more you know about your health and about the possibility, you know, to get cured, the better off you are. You can't really rely on your doctors. You don't know. You know, most people who have these ongoing problems for a long time try to find someone who is considered a Lyme literate doctor. And I don't know if the other doctors are offended by that or not, but there are some doctors that are a little more open to believing people when they start telling them about their symptoms. Other doctors will just say, well, maybe you're just emotionally upset or something along those lines, which really doesn't do people well, especially when they're having these serious issues, which are often in the brain, because this bacteria does end up in the central nervous system. And Dr. Fallon will show how blood flow in the brain is very much affected by having Lyme disease. So, you know, there's actually physical things we can see that it's causing, and these people are not imagining these symptoms. They're real. So,
yeah, I remember I got a Lyme disease in like 2003 or something, and I was camping in Cornwallville, and about a week later, I got one of the classic bullseye rashes on my leg, and then they took blood samples and tested, and they said, "Oh, it's too soon. We're getting no results because it just happened, but you have Lyme disease."
Right, and that's, you know, the bullseye rash or the expanding rash, that's an automatic. That's one easy thing for the doctor. When you have that, it's easy for him to say, okay, treatment time. But if you don't get that, because only about 60 to 70% of the people actually get that rash. So if you don't get the rash, then it's a little more difficult to convince your doctor exactly what's going on there. So
you're telling them you've got flu-like symptoms.
Right, and my knee hurts, and, you know.
It could be lethargy. It could be anything.
Right. I think the first time I got Lyme was 1999. I went to the doctor. I had a very swollen knee. I could barely walk by the end of the day. I had Bell's palsy, which was kind of scary. I thought I was having a stroke. And I had multiple rashes. So at that point, I already had late stage. And I went to my doctor in Catskill. He said, well, it's definitely not Lyme disease. That's what he told me, and gave me 4 days of some antibiotic I never heard of. At that point in time, he didn't think Lyme disease was an issue or a problem at all. A few years later, his wife got Lyme, and she got very ill, and his whole perspective changed. So it was interesting how that worked. And, you know, I went several times. And even though I didn't get treatment right away, most of the time I feel pretty good. So I've been fortunate. I'm one of the fortunate people that sort of got over it, you know. I mean, I don't know if I actually have any bacteria going on in my body because I do test positive. Last summer, I was tested again, and my numbers were very high. So what that exactly means, I'm not really sure. The other thing about it, like you said about the blood work, if you get bitten by the tick and you get infected, you're not going to show, because they're not really looking for the Lyme bacteria. They're looking for your body's reaction to it, to the metabolites that are produced by your body. And that takes 5 to 6 weeks for that to happen. So when you get bit by a tick and there's a Lyme threat, the doctor will often say, come back in 5 or 6 weeks. If they don't, if they test you right away, you're going to definitely be negative. And I know I've gone to urgent care before, and they said, yeah, well, you got a bullseye, you'll definitely be positive. And I wasn't. So it's 5 or 6 weeks later. The problem with that is, if you get anaplasmosis or babesiosis, you don't have 5 or 6 weeks, maybe. Especially anaplasmosis, which is very common in the area. I think that when they first discovered that particular disease, another bacteria infection, was in Wisconsin. And, you know, guy went to the doctor and said, hey, doc, I was bitten by a tick, and, you know, I'm not feeling real well, but I'm not feeling too bad. And the doc said, okay, well, come back in 5 or 6 weeks. We'll do some blood work. Within about 2.5 weeks, he was gone. So, you know, he perished. So I know when I had anaplasmosis, which was a few years ago, and I went to my doctor, he said, come back in 5 or 6 weeks. And I said, no. I said, you need to give me something today, because I think I have anaplasmosis. And if we wait, I could not survive. You know, that's very possible. So he ended up giving me 3 pills, 3 doxycycline pills. And that's basically what the CDC recommends. Within 3 days, I felt fine. Just 3 pills, I felt fine. And then I went back and he gave me 12 more. It's a 15-day run for anaplasmosis. So even though it's 5 or 6 weeks for the Lyme to show up, some of these other diseases are a little more threatening. And the other ones, like anaplasmosis, babesiosis, they have the potential, and Rocky Mountain spotted fever, which is not really a Rocky Mountain problem. It's really an East Coast problem. Those are potentially fatal diseases. So you need to get treatment quickly. Not, you know, no messing around with those guys. So that's why people have to learn. People have to go to these websites and learn about these diseases so that if anybody in their family shows up with these symptoms, they can react quickly.
Where do you know where the research is going? Are they trying to eliminate ticks or give humans vaccines, or are they trying to just treat the thing?
I'm sure they're working on vaccines again. You know, we had a vaccine back in 1992, which was taken off the market in 2002. The company said due to poor sales. I believe there were also a lot of lawsuits involved because people who had taken the vaccine, some of them actually got symptoms very similar to having Lyme. I'm sure there's people working on vaccines. I don't think anybody's come up with anything yet. I know Dr. Fallon's going to be talking about some new tests that he's been working on that will actually perhaps give us the ability to see if you actually still have an infection after treatment. So that's vitally important because not everybody responds the same way. We're not all just, you know, cookie cutter human beings. We're all a little different. Our genes are different. We react different to different medications and to different pathogens. So it's a, you know, it's a different situation for everybody. And that's what we have to be aware of. That's why you have to watch out for yourself and for your family and make sure that you know everything to keep yourself protected.
There's not something like simple you can do, just like eat a lot of garlic or something that'll
Well, you know, I have people tell me that all the time. I eat a lot of garlic and the ticks never bite me. And I say, well, I eat a lot of garlic and the ticks are biting me all the time. So I don't know.
You've got the Italian ticks on your property.
Yeah, apparently. Garlic is good for you. You know, just like people say to me all the time, I'm not going outside anymore. And I try to explain to them that actually going outside is vitally important to your health.
You're not going to get any more vitamin D.
No, exactly. And even just to be out in the trees and in the forests and places like that. And this is why cooperative extension is involved, because we send people to the forest. We send people out to the garden. We do that a lot, and because we tell them that's really good for you. Just walking through the forest is actually really good for you. So you need to continue to go outside. You just have to know how. You just have to protect yourself when you are outside.
And actually, most times when you go for a walk, you won't get bit by a tick.
That's true. And you know, not all ticks are infected either. So you know, don't think just because you got bitten by a tick that you're going to get ill and bad things are going to happen. That's not the case. It's probably less likely that you're going to have a problem if you get bit by a tick. Of course, the longer the tick is on, the better the chances are. So the quicker you could remove a tick, we used to always say at least 24 hours. The research basically said 36 to 48 hours for a tick to feed on a person. Before it would, that was in the laboratory, that kind of number. And so we always like to go with a 24-hour number because people need to be aware of it every day. But now, you know, with some of these other diseases like anaplasmosis, where it could be less than 24 hours, it could be maybe 8 to 12 hours. The deer tick virus, which I won't talk about because it makes people really nervous, even though we're not really seeing it in people yet, but that one only requires 15 minutes of feeding to transmit. That's a scary one. So if that one ends up becoming a big deal, we're all going to be. It's similar to West Nile virus. You may not have a symptom. You may have a mild headache, or you possibly could die. So it can be very. It's an encephalitis meningitis type thing. Mm-hmm. So it's it's a problem. And if it moves into our county, we'll be the first to let you know if we find that out. I mean, we do know that in Putnam County, they looked at ticks, and I think 6% of them were infected with the deer tick virus. And now, how that transmits into numbers of people, I haven't heard a lot of people coming down with it. So maybe that mechanism hasn't really been put together yet for that virus to get into a human. But, you know, these things seem to be evolving so quickly, globally, I might add, and there's so many different strains of all these pathogens that it's getting very complicated. We have a new tick that's also moving up from the south called the Lone Star tick, which right now on Long Island, places like New Jersey, there's quite a few of them. They don't carry Lyme, but they carry other Borrelia bacterias and other things. I don't know if people have heard.
What size are they?
They're a little bigger than a deer tick. They're much more aggressive than a deer tick. They're a little tougher in terms of the humidity requirements. So they, you know, Lone
Star. They come from Texas.
They come from the southwest, so they can tolerate a little dry weather a little better. They're much more aggressive. Generally, with a deer tick, they're going to maybe move 15, 20 feet on their own feet in their whole life. That's about it, except if they're on a bird or an animal. But with the Lone Star tick, if you're 50, 60 feet away, they'll come get you. You know, they have these interesting little sensors in their legs that can pick up CO2 and other things at a distance, and they're very aggressive. So they may be a problem. They're not here yet. Let's hope we have a good 20 or 30 years before they get here. Let's hope
global warming,
happens.
Though, is bringing all kinds of things.
And that's very possibly what's happening. I don't know about the deer tick, because the deer tick population thing, you know, if you go back to Lyme, Connecticut in 74 and 75, I mean, we weren't talking much about climate change at that point. And that's when the deer ticks were spreading out from basically Long Island, Cape Cod, and that whole area. And
back then, we were talking more about conspiracy theories, like people didn't really go to the moon, or the Lyme disease was created in Long Island on
Plum Island. Yeah, that it was a government research thing that escaped. And you know, there was a book that was, I think, pretty successful that put that idea out there. And it was a convincing premise, I have to say. I read the book, and it was a little disturbing. But there are other reasons that we could look at. We could look at bird migration routes and things like that, and you know, which direction the birds are going. Because we know they're on birds, so we know that's a problem. Now, why they're so much different up here in this part of the world than they are in their native location, which would be Kentucky and Tennessee and down there, that's a mystery.
Because you say they don't bite humans.
They rarely bite. The nymph, the summer tick, bites a human down in their native region. But up here in New England, that's commonly what our problem is. We see the adult ticks, which are out right now and will be out in again in October. You know, that's the adult guys. And they're pretty big and they're easy to spot. And when they get engorged, they look like a raisin. They're large. So they're much easier to find. The summer tick, the nymph, when it gets engorged, it's still small enough that you don't even see it. And you know, probably half the people that get Lyme, if not more, never saw the tick because they're that small. And, you know, they get their meal and they drop off. And the next thing you know, you're having some issues.
So maybe we all need to drink mint juleps this weekend for the Kentucky Derby to keep the nymphs off of us.
I know I've heard some of the explanations, what they say about why they're not a problem. I've heard some people say it's too hot. I've heard other people say it's too humid. But I can't imagine it would be too humid for these ticks that are so humidity-driven. So I don't know. It's a mystery that I haven't actually had time to investigate. I may retire in a couple of years, and I may spend some time at the libraries trying to figure this stuff out. You know?
We've been speaking with Rick Burstell from the Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties. Again, the event you were talking about is Dr. Brian Fallon from Columbia University is coming May 1st to the Columbia Greene Community College. And what's the phone number people can call if they want to get tickets? Today's the last day to register?
That's correct, 622-9820.
And that's a free event. They just need to register in advance.
It's a free event. The reason why we want registration is because the facility will only hold a little over 400 people. And I think, like I said last night when I left work, we were up to 360. So there's not a lot of space.
A few spots left if you want to come on May 1st to see Dr. Brian Fallon. Anything else at the Cornell Cooperative Extension coming up that you should mention while you're here?
Well, now that you mention it, we're having a great plant sale this Saturday. Matter of fact, I just brought in a whole bunch of little tomato plants. I think I brought in 100 tomato plants this morning that are about 4 inches tall because it's a little early yet to plant tomatoes. So, you know, you wouldn't want them to be a foot tall at this point in time. And these are special seeds from Cornell, actually, that are blight resistant. So they're resistant to late blight, to early blight, and to Septoria leaf blight. Which doesn't mean they can't get it, but they're much less likely. And I don't know.
We had the blight bad a couple of years ago.
Oh yeah, and you know, in this county last year, we were pretty good. We didn't have the blight here. But if you looked at the map of where late blight was last year, it was all over the state, Columbia County, and everywhere in the West. So you know, we may have that kind of a year this year. So people should start looking into getting resistant plants. Because it's a better idea if you're going to grow tomatoes and you want them to not crash and burn, which is what happens when late blight comes in. And so we're having this plant sale from 9:30 to 11:30 on Saturday morning.
This is an acre at the...
This is right up here in Acre, yeah. So it's a Master Gardener
on Route
event.
23, yes.
Right. It's basically Master Gardeners have put together some plants to sell.
All right. Anything else?
I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
That's a busy weekend, May 1st with... Dr. Brian Fallon at the community college, and May 2nd with the plant sale at the ACRA.
I'm going to take a couple of days off after that. I think I could use a rest because trying to get all these things together.
You got leaves to rake.
I do. I have leaves to rake. I have firewood to cut for next year.
That's another place they like
I
to
have
hide,
mushroom bolts to cut for next year. And
There's ticks everywhere.
Oh, there is. There is. And so everywhere I go, I'm in tick world. So that's why I wear my permethrin clothes, and that's why I'm still above ground, okay? That's what I want to mention today. So you all stay safe out there.